Okay.
We're just meeting in the home of Gilbert and Ada Lincoln, and we've prevailed on Mr. Lincoln to talk a little bit about himself in the old days.
Yeah, when I grew up at the Notak area, I was raised over at the camp on reindeer service, about 30 miles from the village, and we didn't have no school there. So Mr. George Wagner was my school teacher at the time. And my stepfather passed away, so my mother, actually I was adopted to Agnes. And I grew up there, been hunting there, traveling from one place to another. We never stay in the village all the time. So I ended up traveling all over. The only time we really hunt fish is fall time for the winter use, trying to hunt caribou. I know my stepmother used to make a big snare. I was wondering why he was making a big snare he used for hunting caribou. He'd make a big snare and anchor it to the tree. There was really a big tree about that much. So I snared the caribou, but it willows.
Was the snare made of a rope or?
It was made out of caribou hide, beaded together. And most of the time he was hunting the ptarmigans. Rabbits and ptarmigans, that's what we were eating on. We didn't have enough flour or tea. And springtime we used to go out muskrat hunting, hunt muskrat during the spring, May, April, last part of April till June 7th. And that give us a little fur exchange for groceries. And that time I remembered the tea was 25 cents a pound. Mm. And also the coffee was 50 cents a pound. And I still remember that 100 pound flour was $5.75. And you can get the sugar for $6 even, 100 pounds. And my great grandma used to get enough flour and sugar for the winter. So we'll have enough till spring break up. Sometimes we go short on flour and sugar. So I've been raised at Notak most of the time and go down to Kotzebue by boat. And we never have outboard motors or nothing. We sail down there. And coming up the river, you had to go pull the rope around the banks. You can have our groceries going up. That's how we were raised. And the only place we used to have hard time was about 25 miles from Notak. It's a little down by the river, sloped down a little bit. The only rough spot used to be. And my mother raised me and my grandmother. They taught me how to hunt, how to store some meat winter time. And once in a while, my first rifle was 44-10. I don't think everybody knows about 44-10. You put the powder in first and you chew the lead and then you sock it in there. They call it, old people call it Akhwanurak. You had a primer, you put the primer right on it after you cocked it. Then you put the primer there. It was 44-10 double barrel. That's the first rifle I owned when I was 17. And then my mother wanted to go see his sister, so we went to Barrow. My uncle chartered the airplane, DC-3, one of those first planes Wings got. And I thought it was going to cost a lot of money. From Kotzebue to Barrow, it cost him $600 for the charter. Take my sled and my dogs, all the stuff we got in the Barrow.
When was that?
1956. That's after I got out from the service. I'm a lifetime member of veterans. And then I worked up at the Barrow all that time till I met her.
Well, maybe Mrs. Lincoln, we could ask you some questions. Maybe you could tell us where you were born and raised. Was that here at Anaktuvik?
No, I was born in Kitlik River someplace. And I was raised here.
In Anaktuvik?
Yes.
And you showed us a sod house in Anaktuvik that you said you used to live in. Could you tell us about that house and how many years you lived there?
Well, that sod house was built about 1957, I think it was, later than 57. And I lived in that sod house until 1962. That's when I left Anaktuvik to go to Barrow. And that's where I got married, in Barrow.
In the, I understand you lived in the sod house with your brother Lazarus, and that the village used to have its Eskimo dances in there. How was that managed?
Well, that's a biggest sod house in Anaktuvik they got that about in those days, and we used to take our bedding and the stuff out before we start the Eskimo dance, and the whole village used to fit in that place where they, when we have the Eskimo dance. All we leave in that sod house was our stove. And after the Eskimo dance, everybody, all the young people help us put our things back in the sod house again.
What did you use for flooring in the sod house?
Those are boxes from the
Were these sod houses kakpangabat mani inyugok sa kabin? Mani.
Yeah.
Iglupia kang amibat?
No, not tell about. The only one that was made out of the house like this was ARL. It's 60s, I think they put up that yellow building down there from Barrow. Quite a few guys from Barrow came up here to put that ARL building down there. Boy, it used to be real big because everybody was living in the sod houses. Yeah, that was a big house when they first put that ARL house down there. Because we were out living in the sod houses.
You see that bridge a while ago? The homemade one?
Yeah. That one we crossed.
No?
Oh, that little bridge on the side.
Yeah. Oh. That used to be original bridge for walking across the river. When we first come up here, 73, 74, they had a bridge right there where that main bridge was there. We used to repair it once in a while, that river goes.
The John River. You were telling us that you got married in Barrow. What? Tell us a little bit about where you settled down after that, after the two of you got married.
After we got married, we settled down at Barrow. Bought a house from Matumek. We lived there for about a year and a half. And then we bought another house from a hut. So when we decided to come up here, we sell everything. We moved up here in 74. And then we've been up here since 74. So I bought another house from Alaska Independent Company.
So you like it here? What are the things that are most important to you here at Anaktuvik? What are the reasons, the main reasons why you like being here?
Well, I tell you, I let her went down home for 2 weeks, and that she wouldn't come back. So I came back here same fall. So I like it up here. The best part is the hunting. That's where all the enjoyments I got is hunting. I like to hunt. Every place we go, I took a fishing rod along. That cause that's the only thing I used to have when I grew up, is a little fishing pole made out of willow about that long. I had one string a little longer than a pole. I just go like this and do some fishing. My first fish hook was one of those safety pins we got. That was the best hook we got at Nootek. A little string and a safety pin. All you do is open the safety pin, bend that up and put a little bait in it and tie the other rest. And it already had an eye right there on a safety pin.
Well, it was you brought him over here when he let you come back for a couple of weeks. What's so special about Anaktuvik for you, Mrs. Lincoln? Why do you like it here so much?
Well, I was raised here, and then I went to Barrow, 53, and got married, living in Barrow for 11 years, and I didn't go nowhere after. I would just stay raising my kids for 11 years in Barrow. I didn't go no other villages. And after that, well, my kids were a little bigger then, old enough to travel. And then he said, well, you can go home for 2 weeks. And then 2 weeks went by, he come here, charter a plane to pick us up. I said, there's no way I could go back to Barrow now. I'm home now, I can't go back to Barrow. So, I don't know, it's just that I was, you know, I know this place more than Barrow. I can do more hunting here.
Eileen, you were going to bring something up.
I was going to ask, since you hunt for caribou and fish, have you noticed any changes since the time that you started and to what is now?
Yeah, there's a lot of changes on that hunting up here, at mostly here at Anaktuvik Pass since I've been here, 74. We used to travel all over on the south part, going over to Chandler, and nobody tell us where to go through till this gate of the Arctic come up. And then that's when everything started changing. The only place we had free time is going to north, because it belonged to a regional corporation. And the other part down here, they only give us 50 feet in the river from the bank.
The easement.
And that's not enough for if I going to go hunt sheep, I got to go more than 50 feet to hunt sheep or caribou on that area. That's a good hunting ground for sheep and caribou at fall time, and right now, mostly right now, it's a good time to go over. And you got to get a permission or... And they told us if we don't travel through Eastman, they're going to take everything away from us. That's not the right way to do things, I guess.
What about, can you travel by boat in the river?
No.
The river is only about the deepest is 4 feet or 5 feet. No. The only transportation is we got here is those ATV and snow machine.
I guess I'm not clear. This is Jim Sykes. Can you travel with your ATV? You have to stay within 50 feet of the river, but then can you walk up into the mountains to get your sheep and drag them down to the river and take them back?
Too many hills.
So you have to, only the rivers, nothing else.
It's that river got more. You can follow the river, but you can't go up with your ATVs because of those high hills. There's a lot of obstacles on that river. Mostly when you want to go straight, you got to go up to the foothills of the mountain. Go straight.
I see pipeline tigun tam nana pipeline kanolu kanoli ilya khru tanga ba mani
pipeline di sakamata pipeline di sakamata sama ilu ilu si orang ar tutu tat kawang amin kiwag ngamik short sama isi ilu ilu ngar tubunga.
My question was, has there been any changes that have occurred when the pipeline was being built? And he said that, yes, there's been changes because there used to be more caribou that crossed before the pipeline was constructed, and now there's a lot less caribou coming across. Dafumuna, coming across that way.
Are the caribou that the people take here, are they from the Western Arctic herd?
I think they're mixed. Most of them is porcupine, most of them is Western. They're all mixed. And once in a while you get a reindeer. They're all mixed right now. Concerning to Kotzebue lost that big herd they got. Must have migrated to the western herd.
The reindeer.
Yeah. And once in a while you see alpine caribou coming. It's not too often you see one of those.
But, they're barren grounds caribou. From the porcupine and the Western Arctic herds, yeah.
I don't see the difference between the Western and porcupine herd. I don't know what's the difference between those two. The only difference I can see is that reindeer is smaller than caribou. Even a big bull or a reindeer is smaller than a regular caribou bull. And there's quite a few changes on, since they start talking about this land exchange, that really hurt our hunting over the southwest from here. So we can't go to one place where we used to go fishing at fall time. We can't go there no more because of the Park Service. Got to have permission to go through a certain area. And going over to Chandler, it's not bad, but some places you gotta can't follow that easement on that area there. And there's more hunting area right there at the going over to Chandler all time. Remember, my great grandfather used to say, "That's our land." Nobody, we didn't have no hunting license that time when I grew up. Until 62, they started issuing hunting license.
The state of Alaska.
But they didn't tell us how many caribou you can kill and how many bears or how many moose you can kill that year. They don't say nothing. Nowadays, the limit is down to one bull, maybe one bear, maybe 15 caribou. That's not enough for a big family. Like when we went out hunting, we get two, and we start feeding our relatives and tell people to go eat. And by the time we finish cooking, the caribou is all gone. That's how everybody hunt up here. They enjoying hunting. Mostly my girls like to go fishing. They like to go that way, but I always tell them to watch out for the easement they got. They can't go too far from here.
When you're in camping grounds, how long ago si? O collected to din atago gisigo nakipiasi. Ibaki how long ago ni nakip paguro tatawsi mo fluting inuit. Then pisumi wat mane ut kaving miki atachi mo kluting na pagur tam na ukaw de gilla upi yung atanik tun
okay.
What I was asking was how they there's a very cultural tradition that has not been talked about, discussed, especially in the camping areas. When you're out camping, what we do is that in the coastal areas we gather together all of them. All the people camps, and then they eat and share all the food that they have. So he's going to explain how they do it here.
When we go out hunting, when we got enough people to go together, we had, when we camp out, quite a few people camp together, and then in the morning, we had a big breakfast outside around the camping area, and then when we catch a caribou, we made a fire, campfire, and then we start roasting meat, and we share all the meat we get, and what left over, when we came back, we share it with the village again. That's how the lifestyle here was. We share everything.
What about nowadays?
They're sharing nowadays. Each hunter go home, and the wife cooks, and then they go to the CB, and they said, "Fresh meat, come and eat." That's our youngest adopted little girl.
Our Christmas present. It was like our Christmas present.
One of our
present.
Oldest girls there. We didn't want the girl, but we were forced to get it because it was on Christmas on 25th of December. And we didn't have no choice. It's just like our Christmas present.
Did
They
well,
said
nice to see you.
Eskimo dancing.
Yeah. I think we should go down and see.
It's up to you people.
Sure. And then I think I'll walk back and get a night's sleep.
Mm-hmm.
And you should too, yeah.
Which brain are you going to tomorrow?
Frontier. Yeah, but I have to talk with somebody that deals with Frontier. Man, it was Russian Leona, but not the Equusinian. We can make restoration anymore. Yeah, come.
Well, I don't know about that, but you always
out.
Feel that there's something
to do. Well, one time we had meetings at the same time the Point Hope Whaling Festival was, and we were definitely not the center of the
country. Yeah.
Do you want to see where we are?
Yeah, well, we're holding this gathering in the home of Cheryl Blady, who is with the National Park Service. Reading from Cheryl's shoulder, and we're here at Anaktuvuk Pass, and it's a beautiful, spectacular day in August, and there is no place like it on Earth. And anyway, how about telling us how long you've been here and what you do, Cheryl?
Really, first of all, let me preface this, that when Jim talked to me earlier about it being either on the record or off the record, and I'd like to talk just as, just from my experiences here, I sure can't talk for the National Park Service, and I can give you our superintendent's name and his number, and he would be a real good person to talk to about specifics, but I've been up here since June, first week of June, and it's my first summer up in Gates of the Arctic.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. A good place to be.
Well, when I was in the Canadian Arctic in the mid to late 70s, we heard evidence from Americans about the proposals for establishing Gates of the Arctic. This is a park established under the U.S. wilderness legislation, I understand.
Mm-hmm.
What is that mean in terms of restrictions on use of the park, and can you tell us if there are exceptions for the Eskimo people here at Anaktuvuk Pass?
The Eskimos here have subsistence rights, and it's not just the Eskimos, it's non-racial, that anybody in the village of Anaktuvuk has subsistence rights, that they can go out and hunt in the national park, which other people can't do.
Well, you have a subsistence preference on non racial or non-ethnic lines throughout Alaska, but here, given the fact that virtually everybody in this town is Eskimo, it is tantamount to a preference for the Eskimos.
Yeah.
Are these the only people who are residents of the park, Anaktuvuk?
No, there's a number of different residence communities. Do you want a list of them?
Not really.
Okay.
People who live in Anchorage, for instance, or Fairbanks, they have no right to hunt in the park, even for subsistence, I take it.
Even for subsistence. You have to be a resident, you have to be a member of one of the residence communities, or you have to have Gates of the Arctic be your primary place of residence. And there's a permit system, too. So there's two ways that you can be a subsistence user. You can either live in a residence community or be granted a permit under the superintendent.
So the superintendent could grant a permit to somebody from Anchorage then, could he?
There's a set of criteria that he goes under, and part of that is that Gates of the Arctic needs to be their primary place of residence. Like, there are some places where people have cabins out in the backcountry out here. And if that's where they live, that's one of the things that the superintendent looks at, and whether they've had a past history of subsistence use in the park is another thing that he looks at. And it's a long, complicated process that he goes through in order to decide whether or not they should be granted a permit.
The Eskimo people were saying last night at the meeting that they use snowmobiles to reach their traditional hunting grounds in the wintertime, and they use all-terrain vehicles in summertime, but that the park and that although the park has no objection to the snow machines, they do object to the use of all-terrain vehicles except on the easements prescribed.
And the reasoning for that is in Anilka, when they wanted to make sure that the people could continue their style of life as it has been in the past. And the words that are real important is customary and traditional. And the Congress viewed snow machines as customary and traditional because they've been used up here for a long time. They didn't view ATVs as customary and traditional. And that's where the problems arise.
They expressed real concern about the restrictions that the easements impose on their. There goes one of the ATVs now. That the easements impose on their gaining access to hunting areas and to allotments held by individual Native persons in holdings within the park. Said that some of the easements are, for instance, 50 feet on each side of the John River, I believe, is one, and this means that they have great difficulty reaching their hunting grounds, that the easement access doesn't conform to their traditional access. Any comments on that? Any observations?
I don't quite know what to tell you as far as, see, the difference is that I can't really, what I need to do is send you to the superintendent to ask for his opinions, for official Park Service opinions, and I'm not qualified to tell you what I think ought to be done or what National Park Service ought to do at all, and I can't act as their representative.
I
can tell
that.
You about a personal view and about what people tell me in the village, and I can give you maybe the white person's interpretation
of
what the Eskimos say. And in that, they have, here's a map of the easements. Maybe that will help. I don't know if you've seen one of these or not, have you? Yeah.
It's worth looking at again.
They're,
we're
right here in Anaktuvuk Pass.
And that's the John River?
Right down here is the John.
Oh, that's the John.
Yeah, and then here's the Anaktuvuk here. And these are all village or regional corporation lands. And so those are privately held lands, and they can do whatever they want on privately held lands. And then where the problems arise is where you go into the National Park Service lands. There was a land trade. Have you heard about the land trade?
Yeah.
Okay, that's how come there are these easements that go out into the national park land. The villagers have problems a lot of times because the ATVs, they're amazing machines. I am just amazed at the things that they can do. They can go down hillsides at 45 degree angles. They can go up hillsides at 45 degree angles. They can go through the river. If the river gets too deep and their wheels no longer touch the bottom, then it turns into a raft. And they raft down the river for a while until it gets shallow enough that they can get out. So they're just amazing machines. They can go through very deep muck and still get out of it. But they have some problems with boulders that they don't have very much clearance. They only have about 4 inches of clearance. And they have problems that when they hit a boulder that, you know, they can't get around the boulders. They can't get through the willows. That's another problem. And the willows are in the river bottoms, so that's one of the problems. In the deed, it says that they have to stay within a 50-foot easement unless it's unreasonable or unless it's impassable or whatever. And then they can go out of that for as long as what it takes until they can return to the easement as long until it's passable again. So that gives them an option. That gives them an out. But one of the problems is the boulders from the rivers coming down. So the boulders are all in the river bottom, and also the willows are in the river bottom. So that's kind of a problem for them as far as their technology. Now, what's going to happen in the future, I don't know. As far as the ATVs, whether they'll get ones with higher clearances, that would help them out. That would make it easier for them to gain access to some of the areas. There's, what's it called, a helio craft. It's run with an airplane engine, and it floats on a cushion of air. That's another thing that is that I hear talk of here, but they're very, very loud. So that's going to be a problem for them if they're going out hunting. That's going to, you know, they're going to have problems with that.
The technology is imperfect at this point for purposes of small-scale usages.
Yeah. And it's difficult for the people here because traditionally they roamed all over. And they didn't settle here until the early 1950s. And so it's been very recently that they settled down into this area, and they're used to wandering wherever the caribou go or wherever the sheep are or wherever. And for them to go from that style of life to the style of life that they have now is real difficult. And I'm sure it's very difficult for them to have government agencies come in here and tell them that you must stay within 50 feet of the river bottom. I'm sure that's very constraining. That's very hard for them. And there's a lot of sentiment towards that in the village, too. We had commission meetings about, was it last week? I guess it was the week before. Maybe it was last week. Anyway, and a lot of the villagers came and testified there, too, and made their preferences be known that it was very hard for them to stay within these easements, and also that they needed more easements. And they gave a listing of other valleys that they would like to get into, other places where it's important for them to be able to get into because of hunting, you know, because of bear or sheep or whatever. And so those meetings I felt were very good because it brought a lot of villagers out. And the whole reason to have the meetings here was for the commission to hear what the villagers have to say and hear their concerns. And there was a real good turnout.
That was the Fish and Game Commission.
It was Gates of the Arctic Subsistence Commission. And there were members of, let's see, I think Fish and Game appointed people, the National Park Service and the state appointed people. And I wouldn't quote me on that either.
You said that besides Anaktuvik, there are other places of residence within the park.
Mm-hmm.
But how many people are resident within the park altogether? Any idea?
Oh, boy. The other communities are not as this one is. This one isn't actually on park lands. You know, it's on village corporation lands. And the other communities also are right on the fringes. They aren't actually contained within the park. There's Wiseman and Coolfoot that are over on the Hall Road, and Bettles, Allicacket.
Corbuck.
Yeah.
But Anaktuvik is more in the heart of the parkland than those communities are.
Right.
Yeah.
Those are on the fringes, on the outside. But there again, they have used the park traditionally for subsistence uses. And that's how come they were granted permission to continue that. What sort of things have you heard in the village? Have people made comments as to specific places where they would like to gain access or just?
You see, we're looking into the land claim settlement,
mm-hmm.
the whole structure of regional and village corporations and their relations to state and federal authority. So the principal complaint is not against the National Park Service, but at least so far is against Arctic Slope Regional Corporation because the view is that it was insensitive to the subsistence concerns of the people at Anaktuvik Pass when it decided to make the exchange of lands with the federal authorities. And the National Park Service didn't get off scot-free, but it wasn't the principal target, so...
I'm sure they didn't.
Well, anything you wanted to ask, Jim?
Yeah, I was, one of the big complaints about the Park Service was the permits that they had to get. We heard the two that stick out in my mind is one, somebody said that they couldn't bring other people with them to their allotments on ATVs, which apparently they do have permission to. And I'm not clear on exactly what permits they have to do to hunt. Could you just briefly mention those?
There again, I'm not the best person to ask, and Dick is a much, much better resource, and don't by any means take what I say as gospel, but what I've gained from the meetings is that he will grant a permit.
That's the superintendent.
The superintendent.
What is his name again?
Dick Ring. And
R-I-N-G.
Right. And that people are allowed to, the National Park Service cannot deny people access to their private land, to their property. And I think that on the permit, that I don't know whether they specify as to who all can go out there, whether it's the owner and his or her immediate family or what, but I think that the villagers are mistaken that they can't take other people out there in their ATV. If they're given a permit to go out there, I think that they're mistaken that they can't take other people out there, because I think that there again you'd have to ask Dick as to who would be contained in the permit and how long the permit is for and whatever. But from the meetings, I understood it that it wasn't going to be any only you and you and you are allowed to go out there, but if they want to take people in their Argo and go out there, then that would be all right.
What about the hunting? If they want to go into the park in a place where they, you know, they were telling us that one of the reasons they don't like the easements in hunting is to go along the riverbed, but they say the caribou aren't always there. They're over several hills and valleys that they don't have access to. If they want to go hunting there, for example, what do they have to do in terms of a permit?
Well, they can go hunting wherever they want, and as long as it's within an area that they have traditionally used. And for Anaktuvik Pass, that's a lot of area because they were a semi-nomadic tribe. And as far as them getting a permit, they would have to go through the superintendent, and I don't know that it is within his authority to grant a permit for them to use Argos to go wherever they want. He can grant on an emergency basis if the caribou don't come through Anaktuvik Pass, and caribou are so important for this village, if they don't come through here and if there's no way that they're going to be able to get their meat, and if they have to go over to Chandler Lake or if they have to go to some other valley in order to get to get caribou in order to make it through the winter, then I think that he can grant a permit on an emergency basis. But as far as a daily, run-of-the-mill, everyday basis, I don't know that it's within his authority to do that.
But when the caribou are coming, can they just go out and hunt them? Mm-hmm. They don't have to have a permit then?
No. They're a member of this residence zone, of this village, and they can hunt wherever they want as long as it's an area that they have used traditionally in the past.
Have you had any problems? I mean, what kind of questions do people ask you when they want to go out, or what kind of questions do you get asked?
A lot about the easements, a lot about where the easements are, and mostly about ATVs, also some about airplanes. There are some restrictions with airplanes. Airplanes are one of the other mechanized means of transportation that are not provided for in Anilka because they didn't think that it was customary and traditional. And so there's a lot of questions about airplanes and whether they can use their airplanes to go out and go hunting. And they can't for subsistence. You cannot use an airplane for subsistence activities, for hunting. But they can use an airplane to go out sport hunting. And if you try and explain the difference to the villagers that, yes, you can use your airplane to go out and go sport hunting or sport fishing, you can go out and use your plane, to go sport fishing. But you cannot use your plane to go out and go subsistence fishing. And try and explain that to a villager, and it's real difficult.
Could you explain it to me?
Well, I had to have it explained to me. In the law, they have different categories, and I think they use the state regs. And one, if you're using hook and line, then it's considered sport fishing. If you're using a net, a seine, or a spear, then it's considered subsistence fishing. And then you still have to do it in accordance with Alaska state law. You still have to observe the bag limits and observe, you know, how many fish in possession and the length and, you know, whatever other limitations they have.
Well, so within the park, even though it's a wilderness park, you do allow sport fishing.
Mm-hmm. In accordance with Alaska state law.
What about sport hunting?
No. Not in the park, but in the preserve, yes. And there's two, did you know that there's a national preserve up here also? Yeah. And in the preserve, yes, on sport hunting.
Are those dotted lines on the southeastern and southwestern corners of the park?
Yeah. If you look over there, it's on southwestern, down on the boot, and then way up in the northeastern, the yellowish areas. It sure is. It's like 8 million acres.
It's about the size of Massachusetts, is it, or something like that?
Something like that. I don't know what state it would be comparable to. Big, anyway. It's huge. A beautiful one, too. Boy.
Well, thanks very much. It was real nice of you to talk to us.
You're welcome. No problem.